He's the fine sports journalist for The Athletic, a product of the Montana School of Journalism. His journey began in Alaska, now a Portlander. On Twitter, it's at Tyson Alger. Tyson, so how are you and yours holding up as we've now gotten more than 100 days into pandemic 2020?
You know, actually, I don't think I've moved from the couch from the spot that I last talked to you in. I just kind of assembled my life around that little quadrant and have just anxiously awaited the phone call back. So thanks for having me on today.
All right. Well, if I could keep you occupied, you must have an incredible food delivery service if you haven't even been able to move. I got to tell you, I'm a little bit jealous. So, you know, the last couple times we talked, I actually forgot you. Your pinned tweet is about Ifo Ekpreolomu, and right before the Rose Bowl, you penned a piece about what became of him, ironically, since he got injured playing for the Rose Bowl against Florida State, and kind of a unique story because he was wise enough to have one of those first loss of value insurance policies. So, I don't know, being financially protected, seems he's not a regrets guy and kind of more forward looking.
Yeah, most definitely. With the Ducks going back to the Rose Bowl that year, that was one of the stories that I wanted to tell, because I thought that was the biggest news going into the last Rose Bowl, was when Ifo went down and that first practice preparing for Florida State. That was my first year on the beat, and Ifo was, you know, then one of the best players I had ever seen play in college, and that's dated until now. And, you know, you just always kind of like wonder what happened to those guys, because, you know, we all write the story about the injury so much and you know, the devastation. And I wanted to circle back with him and see how his life has been. And, you know, even after, you know, his NFL dreams came to a way too premature end because of those knee injuries, he's really fashioned a life for himself and is very happy living in the Beaverton area. He's a trainer now. He's married. He and his wife just bought their first house together. So, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously a lot of these guys want to go on and be the big football star and have those sort of dreams. And Ifo was especially one of those guys because he was one of the best cornerbacks in the country that year. But, you know, he's been able to fashion himself a life, and he's pretty happy right now.
No, it was great to hear. As far as recruiting goes, I generally lean on the recruitniks, because until a guy shows up on the depth chart for a game, I'm not all in. But I saw you on YouTube talking about the new wide receiver. So I guess now you also just updated about 5 minutes ago. They also scored a tight end, a 4-star. So between that and this kid Tony Franklin, I mean, how much does that just further emphasize where this program is in recruiting? Because it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that this staff is so kind of worked into the areas where they recruit. That, I mean, they haven't lost a beat at all here during you know, the quarantine period between, you know, landing Troy Franklin a couple weeks ago, who is you know, their second best receiver commit of all time. And then following it up today with Terrence Ferguson, who's a big-bodied tight end, a 4-star kid from Colorado. I mean, the Ducks have an absolutely loaded tight end class, kind of looking at the next 3 or 4 years here. I think they have one senior on the roster right now and a lot of real young pieces there. I mean, even including, you know, a player like Patrick Herbert, who was a 4-star last year and redshirted and should be getting his feet wet here this season. So, you know, the Ducks have, you know, the quarterback in their class. They have some monster offensive linemen. You know, they just keep adding these pieces. And while we've seen the really big pieces come on defense the last couple of years with, like, Noah Sewell and Justin Flo and Kayvon Thibodeau, now they're kind of getting a lot of those skill players on offense here. And especially, like, Troy Franklin. I'm really excited to see what that type of player can do in Joe Moorhead's offense, because I think that, you know, if looking at his tape, he looks absolutely electric, whether it be going and getting a downfield or a guy that you can, you know, give a screen out to and let him make some plays with the ball.
You know, as far as the receiving core overall, who aside from Juwan Johnson pretty much bring back the whole arsenal, and you mentioned new coordinator, new position coach, and it seems just like the group who will take the field for 2020, they don't lack much. It seems speed, big targets, a pretty diverse skill set that, you know, could do some serious damage.
Yeah, I've been trying to do my due diligence here and find, you know, the things to be cautious about. And I mean, obviously everyone knows you're replacing Justin Herbert at quarterback, and you do have four pieces on the offensive line you need to replace. But like outside of those two things, which I'm fairly confident, at least in the offensive line, that Mario Cristobal will have that thing functioning at a high level. I am high on Tyler Shuck, but you know that's a whole different animal on seeing how a quarterback faces a game action. But outside of that, I mean, they have a ton of experience at running back. The tight end room's loaded. Wide receivers, you're losing Juwan Johnson, who like had some moments last year but was injured for most of the year. But you get Johnny Johnson, Jalen Redd, Micah Pittman, Devin Williams, who came over from USC last year. You get all these guys back in addition to what they're adding in these upcoming classes. I really like what Oregon's doing this year. And, you know, if they're able to compete like it's scheduled this year, I like their chances in just about every game. I think it's so hard to think that, like, that Ohio State game is scheduled to be about 2 months from now. But, man, I'm excited for that one when it happens, because I think Oregon is going to be able to surprise some people this year just with some of those offensive weapons they have, because we kind of know what we're going to get from the defense, and that's one of the best defenses in the country right now.
Yeah, I agree. I'll get back to football, but I noticed over the weekend for The Athletic, you wrote about a guy named Dan Boyer. He's a graphic designer. So I guess for the last 6 years, he's kind of concocted these animated shorts for Duck pregame. So kind of explain his inspiration, what he provides, and you know, what he does before Oregon games.
Yeah, definitely. So I obviously we all write about football, but I kind of like a little bit of offbeat stuff as well. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have seen these things. They come up on, Oregon social media and stuff, but there's those little, cartoons that pop up like the day before a game that usually has like the duck and the cartoon and doing something goofy. And, Dan Boyer is the guy who does those. And, recently he created Austin Stadium and like this whole Oregon world inside of the Animal Crossing, video game for the Nintendo Switch. And so I got in touch with him and just kind of wanted to learn about his process and why he's so into making Oregon related, animated content. And essentially he's just a really big Oregon fan and was always just kind of annoyed at how like half butted other teams' attempts at trolling the Ducks were. So he's like, you know what, I can put my skills to use here. So for the last like 6 or 7 years, he's been making those animated cartoons and is just a creative person within this Oregon sphere. And so it was kind of fun to shine a light on him and his process and something just a little bit different this week.
It sure was. I mean, so I like you wrote, I think the original Autzen Stadium that was opened in 1967 cost like $2.3 million. What you think about that now, that's hysterical. So he creates his own Autzen Stadium, and you mentioned it's based on Animal Crossing. It's like a virtual sandbox where you could create whatever you want. Run me through that a little bit. I'm not one of, you know, I'm going to be 60 soon. My version of a video game is I shoot pool and darts.
Yeah, you know what? I grew up pretty well versed in video games, but you know, this definitely wasn't one that I mean, I was familiar with, but I haven't played a bunch. But if people, this might be a bit of a dated reference, but if people remember like that video game The Sims for the computer about like 20 years ago, where you could kind of just like, you know, run people's lives. I guess it's a dream game for people whose lives aren't going well currently. Yeah, but but essentially in Animal Crossing, like they put you on like this fake island, and you're just allowed to like, you can build a house, you can build a garden, you can build a freaking football stadium if you want to, and you just kind of like hang out, and the other people who have the games can come out and check out your world and those sort of things. And keep in mind, I had to have Dan explain a fair amount of this to me as well. But and it just kind of seems like a social interaction thing. So like when Dan made that world, he was able to like give people and Oregon fans out like his code to the island, so they could come and virtually visit Austin Stadium and do the walk across the Willamette River, and where he was able to make clothes in the game. So he was able to make like Marcus Mariota and Michael James and Jonathan Stewart jerseys. And so it was just just this whole little kind of realm that he created in this game that that some Oregon fans have been able to experience.
No, it's really fascinating. Few final thoughts for Tyson Alger of The Athletic. One general question, and we're talking about recruiting, and I know he's the one-and-done coach, Willie Taggart, but when you look at his attitude towards recruiting, the fact that was he who brought Mario Cristobal here. While some people had a bad taste in their mouth when he left, you know, do you think time is going to treat him better for turning around a 4-win program and, in essence, laying this really solid foundation?
I don't think time's going to treat him better, but time should treat him better. it's one of those things where, he unintentionally made Oregon good. There was intentions in everything that he did at Oregon, but bringing Willie Taggart to Oregon has unquestionably made Oregon a much better program in the long run, because you can do the easy link of saying he brought Cristobal here and Cristobal's turned into this awesome coach for the Ducks, but it goes back to what you just started with, is Willie Taggart came into Oregon and said, I can recruit here. I don't care if it's the Northwest and it's in Eugene and the Ducks don't traditionally have these hot recruiting areas. Willie Taggart came in as a coach who was a good recruiter and said, I'm going to do it here. And it worked for him that year. And although he took off and probably never thought he'd have to think twice about his Oregon career, it's only gotten better, and that was part of the staff that he created. So, while Oregon fans might still, enjoy being able to, take pride in Taggart's demise after that, this dude made Oregon better, and I think that's something that even Rob Mullins, who, when you look at that hire, you go that was a rough hire, a guy leaving a year later. It's like, yeah, well, it all worked out. So, Willie Taggart, good for Oregon.
No question. So during this run, which I basically go to 2007, Dennis Dixon, the logic of the Ducks has been, this offense just lights it up and that opens doors to big things. But kind of along the lines of what you said earlier, how Cristobal has kind of reconstructed the program. We love the secondary. You mentioned Thibodeau, the defense. So now you look at the offense, it's like, okay, it's got to be productive, consistent, and not turn the ball over, and that will kind of open up the doors to what they can accomplish. So it's kind of a different mentality than most Duck fans are used to.
Yeah, and you know what? I just have a feeling that this year's going to be a hybrid of the last two eras of Oregon football, where that 2007 to 2016, where it was just lightning quick offense, and then the last couple years where they've used that, kind of turned more into a defensive school. And I just think a lot of that's Joe Moorhead. I think he's going to be really good for this offense. I think he's going to open things up, especially with the type of talent they have coming in. I think it would be ridiculous for Oregon to be bringing in this type of talent that they are and not be able to utilize it in a high scoring offense. I mean, look what LSU did last year by taking a traditionally low scoring offense and letting it go, and they were phenomenal. So yeah, I think Oregon's going to be that type of offense going forward.
Anyway, I want to talk about the schedule, because after Auburn last year, there were the occasional whiners who were like, why do you got to schedule a game like that? And, some people thought that North Dakota State with Ohio State looming was too tough. I mean, I love the big non-cons, and I know they didn't blow the playoff last year because of Auburn. That was ASU. What do you make of scheduling these tough out-of-league games to prep you for the Pac-12? But with the playoff, as a rule, one game isn't going to kill you.
Yeah, I don't know. So if you look at last year's season, you can be on the side of, well, if they didn't play Auburn and their only loss was Arizona State, Oregon could have maybe been in the playoff. But I feel like despite losing that Auburn game, that immediately got Oregon in the Oregon can at least hang with the SEC conversation last year. And I felt like it got Oregon on a lot of TVs last season, and it kind of helped it escape at least momentarily the Pac-12 sucks narrative. And so I think that got Oregon out of the gates early and at least change people's minds that they were a competent team. And let's say they would have played Portland State that week, and then they get into Arizona State, they're undefeated, but everyone's gonna be like, yeah, but they're a Pac-12 under. I just I think playing those games ultimately helps teams if you win them, and or if you look good in them. You know, if this was a thing where Oregon is year in and year out 12-0, and has that complete national recognition that, like, oh, you know, they can't play a cupcake, but they're still a great team. Like, yeah, that's one thing, but this is still a program on a rise. It's a program that's trying to turn heads, not only in the playoff committee, but in living rooms across the country. And if Oregon's the type of team that can go in and tell recruits, hey, like, week one, we're going to be playing in the biggest game of the year. Everyone's going to be watching you. I think that's a huge selling point. So, yeah, it sucks for them to lose on, like, week one, but, like, you know, go back to 2014, and people's best memory from that season, or at least one of them, is the Michigan State yep. game. No one was upset the Ducks were playing or doing that game, and they won it, and it's one of the best moments in Oregon history. And so, yeah, I mean, you can play it safe, but, like, that's not – safe isn't really what has made great seasons in Oregon history, you know?
No, I'm with you on that one. Folks, great stuff as always. He's Tyson Alger of The Athletic on Twitter. It is, not coincidentally, at Tyson Alger. We're encouraging him to get off the couch because eventually he's going to have to get out and do his job. TA, always my pleasure. Appreciate your time. Be well. And, hey, look forward to talking soon during a more normal time.
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, you'll know where I'll be. So
yeah, I got you in the crosshairs, pal. Have a good one. Take care, Tyson. All right.